I think that's it. All right, well, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Nate Peterson, and this is the Reskilling Reusing class for September 27, 2016. Oh man, we've got an idea in mind for this, which is reskilling and reusing conversation. That's the basic idea. So I apologize to everyone for not announcing this sooner than, like, I don't know, 12 hours before this event, and I promise to do better in the future. And but still, it's always the last Tuesday of the month, so you can just set your calendars. So anyway, if anybody, this is being recorded and it'll be put up on a podcast, you know, sooner than later. Everything is my brother's. It goes to metajenny.com/reskill. And so if anybody wants to introduce by saying their first name, because it's going to be on the internet, maybe you don't want to know it, say your last name. But what is your name?
Susie Brunner.
And you're a Portland resident. Property owner, and you're the Facebook admin for Portland Now, which is Okay, go for it.
My name is Ray.
Uh-huh. And you live in Louisville? I know, but just for the record, you know, because if someone listens to this and they're like, you know, scanning the internet and then they're brushing their teeth and they're washing the dishes and, you know, they kind of want to know just a little bit about it. Okay, St. Matthews, okay. Okay.
I'm Jim. I live in the room.
Jim, okay. Well, sweet. Well, I would like to just apologize to everyone again because, what? My month was just so busy that I don't know how many reskilling and reusing things that came up. I mean, I can only just think of things like on my two hands instead of my, you know, hands and toes. So that happens, but boy, today, there was so much reskilling and reusing that was going on that I just barely got here, and I had to, there was some wet cement involved that had to, like, sort of be laid in a lump rather than, like, stored properly because of these damn meetings once a month, which, you know, I'm not complaining, I'm just suggesting it as a an environmental awareness of what the situation is. So last month I promised that I would have all of the agendas to pass out to everyone. Now I just barely got this off the printer just 5 seconds ago. So if you want to get your camera out and take a picture of the agenda, you can have it. See, that's the agenda right there. Basically, it's going to be what the framework is, what the perspective is, the elements of robustness, landedness practicum, and community paradigm analysis, and then more random practicum, and then the top 10 story, and Henry V. Now that can be done. And we can vary from that, but you gotta have agenda from which to vary from, right? Otherwise you're just sort of not really sure where you're going. That's not, there's a large, yeah. There's random reskilling things in the works, I can tell, that there needs to be like an open. Well, Jim and Ray and Susie did.
And I'm John Lane, for
Cindy. Hi, Cindy.
John, Cindy. Cool. Okay. Well, I would love to do a little framework. Why are we having another reskilling, reusing class? Because the reason that we started this class has not really gone away. The reasons are still there, which is that the hard times are now in Louisville with poverty and ignorance, and hard times are coming with our economy, with debt, with austerity, and also with climate, weather, and crop failure. These things are reasons that we need to reskill and reuse. Now, if you don't know what those things are, just go to Google and learn up on that, all that stuff, because there's that's a framework from which we need to stem from. Oh my gosh, our challenge is to do two things, which is to fight for policy change as well as prepare for resilience. And if it all fails, this is just an, did I write this? An intellectual and emotional joyride. Oh, God. Reskilling and reusing as a joyride. So anything that happens, you know, just fact check with Google if you want to. So can anybody give me an amen with the, if it all just, whatever, it's just an intellectual and emotional joyride?
Amen.
Hey, I was looking for an amen. I got an amen. That's cool. Okay. Well, going on a little bit more, this is kind of put me off my rocker, which is Elon Musk, which is another billionaire. There's one billionaire we all know because of last night's chatty chat time, but Elon Musk on Chris Hayes' show said that things are too late for the planet. So the issues are not long-term fixes. The issue is a call to war. We must reskill towards this end. Even though short-term resilience is excellent for independence of thought and word, the goal is a World War II type of call to arms. What's required? A couple of policy and law changes, and this could be monumentally challenging, given the defenses by the corporate industries. Did what I just said make any sense at all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Elon does chat about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And he takes the name of my favorite scientist, Nikola Tesla, and bats it around and says he's something. Mm-mm. Tesla's the bomb. No. You just listen to it when you're brushing your teeth, okay? A podcast is popping up. Yep, yep. Okay, so anyway, what happens is sometimes I get in these dangerous moments where I have a random thought, which is, you know, if you have reskilling and reusing, if you put those two words together, it's rescuing. So here we are, reskilling and reusing is rescuing. Yeah. Since we're in Portland, we can chat about Portland with Portland lover, and Portland resident. You could just say that Portland rescues itself. Anyway, it's just random. That's why I put it right at the beginning of this meeting, because it doesn't belong anywhere else. In fact, it probably didn't belong where it was. But so at the end of the day, what really does reskilling come down to, which is a friend of mine says, who lives in the mountains and as well, he says you got to make sure that you have the right skin temperature, which is that your environment is nice, conducive, and you have to have your body temperature, like the organs got to work, so you got to have food and water, and then you have to have temperament temperature. So you got to have peace of mind, well-being, chatty chat words like that. So that's important. So for instance, it comes down to money, health, and peace of mind. So money, some people have a lot, some people have none, but can we do all this with the amount of money that we have? Health, can we handle and do the job that we can with the health that we want? Do we want to maximize health? And then the peace of mind, what does that mean? Does that mean hope, or does that mean just like lack of anxiety or something like that? These are bottom rung things. So we'll go up a rung, okay? So we can just like move ahead a little bit. And that is like for men, when my father used to say, always ask questions, who am I, where am I going, and how did I get here? So you have to look at your role, look at your goal, and look at your context. So in terms of reskilling, we are basically who am I? We're practitioners, and our goal is to constantly and practically improve, and then our context is that we're really used to being highly entertained automatons, and we're moving away from that. So that's it. We're practitioners and practically improving automatons. And then as far as reusing, the who we are is we're caretakers and basically garbage ponderers. And then the other part is where are we going? We're looking at cycles of things. We're a cycles things radical. We're basically analyzing how cycles are. And then our context is that we basically know the story of stuff, where stuff comes and where stuff goes, and you know, generally not liking it. Like, I don't like where the story of stuff is. There is a story of stuff on YouTube. You could probably look at it, so, but still, it's, I'm just speaking more generally.
Well, that was interesting.
The story of stuff? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So I want to land on both feet right now, which is, I think that a really good thing to do is to like stop paying rent and just buy a house. Go buy a house right here in Portland. It's cheaper than anything. You already have the bank account amount to just go buy it off jeffcom.org. You can go to an auction. This is important. You could just sort the auctions by zip code, and you could pick where you want to live, and you can find an abandoned or distressed home. You know, because 2008 happened, and now we got all this free, cheap. This is what I'm saying. It is an opportunity of a lifetime. So I mean, here it is right there. So here's a challenge for everybody. If you are not going to do this, then is there someone in your life that you could talk to about this who is looking for a house, a fixer-upper? Because this is basically reskilling and reusing your money away from rent into purchasing. I mean, are there people that we can actually think of saying, well, I wonder if they could just, you know, get this whole I can do it, DIY, you know. If it's not you, then it's somebody else that you know, family, friends, acquaintances, dudes on Facebook. It's not a rhetorical question. So it's not impossible to ask the question, hey, you know, you just open the mind.
Not
so.
Just homeowners. I mean, look at the businesses that are coming in. Okay, now, using some people to buy
stuff. Well, anything you do in Portland is reusing and reskilling, basically. Because it's, but that, yeah, Portland is all about that. Bang! Right between the eyes. Gardenless. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a beautiful community garden over here about two blocks away, and it's no longer there, and apparently we're going to be transplanted. The trees and all. Those peach was so wonderful. This, gosh, they're so yummy this year. Oh, but they had these humongous beetles on them. They were probably that big, and they would just gouge into those peaches and eat them up so fast. I don't know what it is, but you know, just when you got a super fantastic peach tree, then you got the bugs from Hades itself. It's just, I don't know.
They're open to talk to some community there.
Oh, down there, yeah. Well, the shipping port is monstrous. God, it must be, 80 yards square, maybe.
I mean, well, I'm not happy with
that. Well, I just.
Where is it located?
It's about 3-4 blocks that way.
8th and Montgomery?
Just right down the street. Very, very close. Yeah. Yeah, but there's good soil, there's good compost, and there's perennials in there. They all got to be moved.
Yeah, I'm not complaining.
Well, let's just say you want to go buy a lot from the land bank and do it all yourself. They got empty lots here galore. Well, land bank says, well, I'm not sure we do gardens anymore. So they won't sell you a land bank plot for gardening anymore, as if this stuff doesn't matter. They just want to create income.
Mm-hmm.
That's the orchard. That's full up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do a good trees going down. Yeah, that's it. This is the conversation we're going to have.
We talked about
exactly,
it when
Rich
got sick. It was impossible.
There are ideas, and then there's a but, and we're looking for the idea with no but. Yeah.
So what precisely happened to the shipment?
I think the Courier Journal followed it, and Louisville on the inside of it.
Kilcullen owns that whole property.
Right. And they are developing it.
Well, they won't have any trouble at all with the next concern that I'm going to bring up that I'd like to discuss, and that is the idea of how do you optimally mix mortar for old brick. Because all these houses got brick basements if they don't even have it on the walls. So, does anybody know what the right ratio of lime to sand is with old bricks? What is it?
5 to 1, so I do 5 sand, 1 lime. And you can make it harder if you want. So you can do 3 to 1 if you're closer down to the ground. So you're taking on more moisture. And it varies, but I like 5 to 1, 5 sand, 1 hybrid drummers.
And if you put cement inside the mortar instead of just regular lime, as you're talking about, what can happen?
Well, it depends on what temperature you're in. Yeah,
it'll just crack the brick. Then. So there is basically some, hey, I got a really cheap house, look at this. But if you mortar it wrongly, all of a sudden, like, this is not fun.
Yeah.
You crack, all your foundation is just gone. So that's why we talk about it in your class like this, like, you know, just a heads up. Another thing I want to chat about that happened this month is that some really good results happened from using a roll of adhesive roofing. You know, the shingle thing, all that can be such a pain. Well, this stuff, you just get it at Lowe's and it's a big roll and it's got adhesive backing, and then you strip off the plastic that exposes the adhesive, and then if it's a shallow roof, you now have roofing just like that, like 50 feet of it or something like that. So it's pretty inexpensive, and if you have to put roofing up, that is a very good option. And even though I knew about it, it proved itself to be extremely easy to do. Yeah, but it's, well, one thing we did talk about is money, and it's kind of expensive-ish. But
yeah,
so is regular shingles, too.
$70.
Yeah. Do the math, you know. It makes a difference, you know.
It is a household product, but it's just a small piece that's tacky on there. It's not like a little balloon, but it's like a rubber mask. A rubber, it's rolled, they call it a rubber balloon, but because it comes in a roll, but it attaches to the balloon.
Yeah, and
yeah,
and then there's plastic sheet, and then you just zip the plastic off as it's unrolling, zip, zip, and then it just rolls, and it's about 6 inches, so 3 feet.
A low pitch.
Yes, yeah, it's meant for the
flat.
I've gotten different people telling me this is the first to next to it.
So that's something that we're going to want to do.
It's not as thick as a shell. It's a lot thicker. So it's flexible and easy to work with it and you can kind of do it a different way. So if you do put two pieces next to each other and then you put a piece over that seam, then I think it would be too cold.
Well, it's a product that seems to be used. I know our next door neighbor used it as well as I have recently this month, so it's catching on. Another thing I want to share with the group is just basically ladder skills. It's really, I meet a lot of people that have had broken backs because they just fell off the ladder and they... I mean, there's a way to fall, right? If you're falling, just jump at the last second, push off the ladder so you get momentum so that you don't hit the ground so hard. And then when you do hit the ground, make sure you sponge like if you're doing a squat that you've been practicing at the YMCA so you're good and strong so you can actually maybe not hurt yourself. I don't know. And then also be careful going up because with ladders, you have stuff in your hands. Sometimes you have four things in your two hands, and you're climbing up. You know, it's just a lot of work.
Another critical thing is to have a ladder that is distance, so you don't want to be too vertical at the ladder or too horizontal. So, what is it? Everybody knows, I don't know the exact ratio, but it's important to remember. I think it's too shallow for the place to climb on the surface ladder. And it's easy to...
Especially if you're going to drill into something and you push away. Yeah. You push away from the wall.
But if it's too flat, then you're
risking
the ladder.
Yes.
The rating on the ladder.
Plus it's hard to walk up a ladder that's so flat too, I would think.
Once I get it to the proper angle and it feels right, I usually stand on just the first rung and then pull it away from the house a little bit and make sure it doesn't shift or anything. And if it just comes away and goes back just fine, I feel safe to climb it.
Now, there's at the bottom, some of them have teeth that swivel and you can dig into if you need to. I think, is that because if there's a differential between the heights of the two legs, like if there's a slope or something? Or why are those? So it kind of depends upon that.
Yeah, that way you can flip those down and stab it into the ground.
Right. Now, my dad jerry-rigged this bunch of tubes that at the very top that were very wide and then grabbed onto the house on the sides, and so there's no way you can really. I looked at them at Lowe's and they're like $150.
Ladder stabilizers.
They're just way. I got it. That's a DIY waiting to happen, you know, because you can make it for probably nothing, maybe one bolt, purchasing one bolt, but it's very stable for the ladder. So, you know, by all means, use the ladder, but be careful with it. And there's probably a book on ladder skills, but I haven't read that one yet.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's more than just grabbing onto the pole and zipping down, isn't it? Isn't it another way that at the very top you could just have some rope and just tie on to something too, just in case it slides? And then that's another possibility. Yeah. So by all means, because we got way too many broken backs around here. Another issue that came up this month, I want to just share with the group, is the idea of sometimes you can just drill or screw right into wood and sometimes it cracks. So it's hard to know when it is that you want to pre-drill because it's so hard. You got to take the drill off, you know, the screwdriver drill bit, and put on the regular per drill, and then drill it in, and then it just becomes lots of moving parts. So, is there like a rule of thumb, like a 2x2 would probably crack, but a 2x4
closer to the end, to the end.
To the end. And hardwood is usually like the stuff along the heel toe, the shoe molding and stuff like that. That's kind of hardwood, or
probably.
And then the trim, what's it called, along the edges of the doors. So don't be surprised if things get cracked unless you pre-drill. Yeah.
Even nail.
Even if it's a big thick nail, it can crack. Oh, shoe molding for the nail.
So no.
And then what does that do? Oh, okay. So this little nail thing, are you saying you put the nail down flat like this and just sideways?
Point up.
Oh, I thought you were going to just like make like wings on it. But you're saying just dull the tip.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that's pretty cool. All right,
we'll write that down.
You're mocking me. Okay. Well, all right. So I made a woodshed, and I just want to share with you. There was no drilling of any cement posts at all. I just found some 2x4s or 4x4s, and that thing is staying up by the weight of the wood and some good cross bracing. So if you've got 2x4 sitting, and you got a piece right across the very top of it. Well, then you put a diagonal on that, and then it holds really well. The other 90-degree one, you have another diagonal on that one. I feel really good about not having to, have a post hole digger, dig a hole, put a cement post in there, put a 4x4 in there, and then wait for it to dry. It's like, no, forget about that. You can make a good, strong structure, but it's not cemented into the dirt, so it could fly away with a high wind. That's
what about termites?
I don't know. Tell me. Oh, because the dirt touches the wood? Oh, yeah, that would be an issue, huh? So at the bottom, then you could just put a plate of steel or something, or. So that the dirt doesn't touch the 2x4. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. A block, but the block will get rotted too. The question.
It could be sacrificial though. So.
Yeah, every couple of years you got to swap it out. Yeah, that's true. Or with a saw, or sawzall. If it gets rotted at the bottom, you just sawzall it and then put it in.
Every couple of years.
That's the design feature that everyone should be keeping in mind these days, more or less. So anyway, remember cross bracing works very effectively. I'd say the one thing that I learned too is that caulking is good. I caulking Good. Use it. I don't think I have anything to say except for buy a $2 tube and then just have at it and see what happens. There was an instance recently where there was so much of a width of a crack that there was no way the caulk would go in. So then you can go to a store that has the shipping really thin, like 1 mil plastic sheet, and they wrap around their big pallets, and they throw it away once they unwrap it. That stuff is super thin, and that can go inside very large places. You can squeeze in there, and then that removes. That then allows, you know, there to be a filler, and then you can caulk it if you want after that, but it's not that gaping hole anymore. I mean, it's a
backer.
Yeah. So, and that's free and that's abundant. I mean, you just go to any dollar store and you're going to have tons of that really pliable stuff. And you can separate it out into the finest stuff and you can go into the... it is like saran wrap, except you can get tons of it and make that happen. Yeah. So... Right. But the other aspect of that is a construction adhesive. And there was some sistering that needed to happen this month, and then we put some construction adhesive on it. What happened is that there's a floor, and under the floor are joists which hold up the house. And those straight up and down joists are 16 inches apart or so. And then sometimes at the very ends, they're sitting there on a nice shelf, so the nice sister goes, joist goes across the whole room. But if it gets rotted because of damage to water, then they'll rot away, and then the floor will start to sink. And then you say, what do I do? Then you lift up the joist with the jack, and then you put in a 2x6 right next to it, and you screw into the one that's sagging, and you make sure that 2x6 is nicely on that ledge once again, and you can then have a floor that's flat. So there's a remedy for flat floors. You just have to get into the crawl space and get up there and make that happen. So the 2x6 sitting right next to the joist is assisting, but you can either put just screws there, or you can put lag bolts. They kind of look like, you know, a pencil or something, but they're screws and they're made out of metal, and then they tighten down really tight with washer. And then you can put construction adhesive along that too. Between the two. But the question is how much, because you could put so much construction adhesive, or is it wasteful to put so much? So I guess that's the question that I kind of don't know, but I've done sistering before without even thinking about putting constructive adhesive, and I'm going to do it from now on because I like to spend $2 on constructive adhesive caulk kind of a thing. So that's that. One reskilling thing that I never thought of, which is to use your Sawzall. If a Sawzall area is too hard to get to, like you need to take something off, and the Sawzall is going to destroy something behind it or something, is to use a metal grinder or an asbestos grinder, not asbestos, masonry grinder. They're like $15 at the local place you can buy tools, and they grind, and you can grind wood off or metal. I touch metal, obviously. Because that's what its purpose is, but you can also grind the wood. But it tends to smoke the wood and maybe start a fire, so you just gotta be careful. You don't do it too much, too much of a hot way. Yeah, just keep your mouth full of water. You can spit on it anytime. But there are weird angles that, you know, sometimes you can use a saw upside down and it really hurts the shoulders after a while. Okay, there are probably other tools. Yeah. Okay. And then I want to encourage everyone on the sound of my voice to get as many wood chips as you can anywhere. and get spent grain and coffee grounds and just put them either in your compost or in your garden, because that stuff should never end up in any garbage can ever. So wood chips are available. If you know someone who has a wood chip grinder, it's like, they gotta be your best friend, because there's no reason that you can't have 4 inches of wood chips, you know, in your garden. Just all that stuff just decaying and
mushrooms. Well, depends on what kind of woods you can tie up the nitrogen.
Black walnut, okay, talk about types of wood.
I couldn't break them down for you, but as a general rule, wood chips should be compost first.
Otherwise, they'll suck the nitrogen out, because they're all carbon. Yeah. That's true. Unless you want to grow a lot of beans there, right?
Or you don't want anything to grow at all.
Well, aren't they nitrogen fixers? And so they got a buttload of nitrogen that they generate.
I'm not sure if that could
counteract. Yeah, probably, yeah. It's an interesting, but I've heard about that wood chip, so I've kind of stayed away from them. But then again, I've seen wood chips that are half leaves, and they just decompose so fast anyway. It's like, okay, well, throw it and make it happen.
So, what you call wood chips that keeps growing? This is awesome. Because then you go down and
oh, there's one for the Google search.
Isn't it black walnut or something?
I couldn't commit to check it to Google. Yeah.
You could have got down a little.
I know that I asked them after season or so. In the house that I renovated and sold, I had a dry area where some trees had been planted and nothing would grow under those. And I kind of wanted a woodland yard. So I was going to put wood chips down, and the woman at the native plant nursery out in Scott County told me no, 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 because of the reason I decided. But she said, what you need is pine bark pellets, which are expensive, of course, they're not, unless you happen to be a friend of your givens or something. But even pine bark pellets are much further along the way. They're not wood chips. Exactly the same. So probably, you know, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to get a big pile of wood chips that you want to enhance an area with, it's a great way to do it, but you need time. That's your very
good. Yeah, well, you can always just go to the store and buy fertilizer and be done with it.
Well, for this situation, that would work because you have basically a hard surface.
And then those will sponge them up.
So what I was trying to do was basically build up a soil without smothering the trees.
Keep it moist, let the worms
so
dig
once
around.
Again, you know, that time is a factor. But it really did.
Well, I've known that there are places that are looking for places to dump. So if you call, you know, around and find, hey, do you want to leave a dump? They'll just leave it right on your front porch. Just a huge amount of.
I'll just jump somewhere
else.
So some of the miles of those are usually the ones that don't have a whole.
Yeah, that's all.
The truck is full. It's a huge.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I want to get into a little bit, is about capacity planning and community mindedness. Because if you have 75 people with their wheelbarrows, that thing's gone fast, you know, because it's not, you know, because there's people all around us because we live in the city. So I'm not serious. Let's see. One thing that interesting that happened is that we had chickens, and the food, the grain, got infested with little worms. Oh, crap. Because the flies get in there, and then the flies create the worms. And so what we did is that we took a tarp and laid it out on the side, and then we just threw out all of the grain onto the tarp, really thin, and the chicken just went nuts. Could find the worms instantly, and the ones that she definitely got full, Then we just put a bunch of them and put them in the refrigerator, and we'll just give them out as munchy, munchy lunchies whenever we want to, because, you know, worms are kind of fun. But the worms now are no longer in the food either, so it'd be so tempting to just take the food and chuck it and say, I got to go buy a new one. But you know, it's a chicken, and if it's got a little worm feces smell to it, if the chicken eats it, so what? I mean, it's just a chicken, right? Chickens don't have rights.
Chickens have rights.
So
does she know what she wants to eat?
Yeah, if she won't eat it, then we won't.
She won't eat it like a rotten apple.
Hmm.
Yeah. The two guys next to each other,
I Well, moving on to what can happen on the roof, which is, I heard that wind is more efficient than solar. So solar wind is always better than anything else, but I don't know how to put up the turbine. It kind of sounds like a little bit of a challenge, but yet a motor is a lot easier than photovoltaic cells. And photovoltaic cells have weird chemicals in them that must be mined from Africa in order to get them. So it's kind of not bad to go to wind. If you can get a motor, all you need is a motor. And then you get blades and you spin it and it makes electricity.
So I think that might be kind of depending on where you are. Kentucky is really a big
Which is why I always say, get the windmills on the bridges. It's so windy on bridges. The walking bridge, I mean, that was my Green Institute thought 5 years ago, and I just can't get off the ground with these ideas. But there it was, you know, just put them up there. Plus, Tom Fitzgerald, I think, said that about 20 feet higher than what is typically thought of as the altitude for windmills, it's very windy, so it depends on how high it is up in the air. So that's cool. Plus, you know, Germany has 50% cloudy days, and they make all their electricity through solar. So you don't have to be in Phoenix, because they have 95% of the sun, but they don't. They still, you know, use traditional oil.
Could you clarify for the podcast who Fitzgerald?
Well, Tom Fitzgerald is he gives an annual lecture at the Sierra Club. I think he's an environmental lawyer, and interacts and works with the folks in Frankfurt periodically. And it may not even be him who gave me that idea, but his name popped in my head, so I thought I'd just say it. Okay, so what I did though recently is I got some electric motors. And then I bought electrical soldering iron, so I can do some serious soldering, you know, of electrical. Because if you use a soldering, big ass soldering gun, you can melt the electronics. So if you want to do some stuff and put together some photovoltaics or with wind, you know, it'd be probably good to wire some stuff together. And this is fun. This is cool. This is kind of dangerous. You know, you're generating electricity, and you could just shock yourself, and you know, you could get in trouble if people found out that you were generating electricity without them knowing. And but at the end of the day, it's kind of empowering as well. So I just throw that out there as this is never going away. It's always going to be a fun, entertaining issue. Let's see. I wanted to say, does anybody have anything else they wanted to say about their latest escapades with like appliers or something like that? Okay.
Wires and sockets and everything. It started out on my
Well, okay, here's the next question, which is there is a room that has a crawl space that the access place is way too small. Like it's a little hole, there's a little square in the floor, lift it up and you can get in there and crawl around and do projects and stuff like that. Well, if so, there's definitely a way to not do that right. Is the way I took a paddle drill bit and went straight up from the floorboards into the other side, and it just ripped to shreds the nice floorboards. So if you use a drill bit, a regular drill bit, and then go up that way, it makes a nice opening. It just makes that nice small opening. But a paddle bit will rip to shreds the floorboard. So you can repair it, but and then once you do that, you can use a coping jigsaw or whatnot, and just you have four corners, you have a small drill bit, and then you make a square from that, and then you glue them together or something like that, and then you have a little trap door, which you can then access the stuff in the basement, because in the basement, you can create a moisture barrier when you have money for it. I mean, you need to, you can't do it all. You put it back, and then you open it up again, and you insulate if you want to. Either insulate the floor or insulate the walls. And there's some differentials there as far as if you insulate the walls, then it'll be kind of warm in your crawl space. But if you insulate right underneath the floorboards, then the crawl space will be cold. And if you've got piping there, then they might freeze, or maybe you don't and don't care. So there is some fun things that can happen below the flooring that have impact on your bottom dollar, but also on the safety and longevity of the house, and just generally fun to really get down in there and get really dirty in crawl spaces. I encourage that.
It's all
for
kind of comfortable too.
Yeah.
On your side, having to work.
Well, and then that brings up the a paradigm thinking, which is one should consider using hardwood floors instead of like carpeting, because hardwood floors, you can then create a crawl space. Well, you can't really create a hatch place. You can't do that with a piece of carpet. If you got wall-to-wall carpet, you can't really make a little hatch?
Yep. I have a friend who has her basement door is it?
Oh, well, I stand corrected then. Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm going to school right now. There it is.
Because she has a shop.
Okay. Well, there you go. But I mean, just in general, though, I think hardwood floors, can be thought. I think a lot of the times is that you got linoleum, and you got carpet on top of that, and you got a layer of these old homes. They just like cut it all down and just go to the hardwood and just enjoy it. And
especially if you buy a home that was,
Good.
Because I kept thinking I was going to have to scrape this stuff all off and do something with it, and he was done in 2 hours, and we called
him. Oh, you dodged
the
bullet.
How could you be done?
Yeah. Well, not all adhesive is made the same.
Yeah.
Well, these people moved in like 1958 and laid down that.
Well, if our house had some paint on the wood in the kitchen, and then I think it was you who said no. And so we took the paint, the hot guns, and we just zipped off the paint and then the hardwood floors and shown underneath it. Interesting though, there were some holes that go into the crawl space. So sometimes if you apply too much heat to the shavings, and they can actually fall smoldering down into the crawl space, which is kind of an interesting predicament because, you know, you've got a fire you can't get to, but it's pretty amazing. So these things just sort of happen. You just don't know what they're going to happen until they happen. So you got to watch. But there are things that can happen with hardwood floors. And some people like to put polyurethane, but we don't have anything. Just nothing. You need to sand it, I suppose. But these are options to get. Now, I wanted to share with you, I think there was a segue that I was thinking of, but I lost it completely. Oh yeah, paradigm rethinking, that was it, yeah. And that is that it would be so fun to, like, get an open lot and then put a antenna there for an FM, like, small power, low power FM radio station. Like that, that'd be pretty cool. You could solar power it or wind power it or I don't know however it else it is, but I think that's the kind of the trending thing. I found out that there's what, 2 low power FM stations in Louisville that wasn't before, and I think there should be even more. You know, they're down there on the other side of central Louisville, but I don't know if they can reach up here. I've tried actually, but I think. Radio can be either irritating if it's the wrong station, or it can be just kind of a good pastime of, you know, folks like us. Like, we're on the radio and just chatting. You know, we would obviously need to probably increase the programming quality a lot, but it would be fun to just be empowered in that way. And there is apparently some radio station in Missouri that's doing some really awesome stuff. Missouri. I got the website here. I don't know. There's stuff happening all over the place.
You mean in an urban area?
Yeah. And I would think, like, having an antenna, big antenna, power antenna, and then all around it, like, sweet potatoes, you know, in a vacant plot, just full of just whatever stuff, and then you got this, you know, stick it to the man kind of antenna sticking out from the garden. That'd be all right. Yeah, Radio Free Portland. It's just a thought. You know, you just ideas just popping out, and that's perfectly fine. So did anybody hurt their finger like I did this like week? I don't know. Can you see that's purple now? It was really purple and it was a blister. And what happened is that I was yanking out a nail, and the thing, you know, the nails have a head, and then the sides were so old that they just gave way. So I was pulling, it gave way, and it was a pry bar, and I had my pinky stuck on the sharp end, and then it hit the adjacent joist, and so that just jammed it real, but, you know, I took it like a person. And I took off my gloves and I saw that my hand was not severed. And well, that's great. And then I moved out.
Your head.
Kind of. It was entertaining. Yeah, any other scars that. Anybody else have any battle scars that they can talk about?
Just emotional.
Emotional, yeah. Cataract scratches or eye, you know. Or, you know. No? Oh, okay. Well, yeah, well, you know, I woke up with an upset stomach this morning.
That was my Christmas day that I discovered you can get in and out of Ottoman.
Oh, cool.
Well, I was trying to fix something I wanted to serve dinner on.
Oh, yeah. Is it because we are just going so fast, we're so distracted, or is it sometimes that accidents just happen even though we're so zen? It's both? I mean, you ran over the electrical cord today. It's the thing. It's like the longer I am, the older I am, the more experiences I have of pain. And I remember those the best. Yeah, it's like not like an 18-year-old. I'm sorry, they're just going to walk right in. But if you're mindful, if you're zen, you know, do you have to cause less pain to your, you know, soul or body? If you're just walking around really aware? This is just a rhetorical question. It's just... What's a backboard? Oh, backboard. And you got hand on it. Okay.
New people sometimes not to do things like that. They have to learn from
wearing ties with heavy equipment. Yeah.
Oh.
And they won't be thinking about what it is.
No, just a lot of pain. Oh. No, I was not zen. I was torn. I was like, I need to get this done quickly. I don't want to go get a different tool. I think it'll be okay. Should I go ahead and just pound it in and just, you know, don't tell anybody?
Walk away sometimes, take a breath.
Otherwise things come up and slap you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
And using the wrong tool.
Well, and the question is, how do you even know what the right tool is? You know, you got ignorance.
That's when you yourself.
Well, I, like earlier today, I needed a fulcrum because the nail was so in there. I mean, it was sticking out 2 inches. I had a good grip on it, but it wasn't budging. So, but what I found is a 2x4 fulcrum didn't work. But when I found a really thick bolt and then put it right in the fulcrum of the head of the hammer, then it just came right out. So you got to know the right tool, yeah. No, never have. Because the fulcrum's very close.
What you're pivoting on.
And the lumbar. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, you know my.
Don't try to save you there.
That's my first reaction was, you know, like today, we were cleaning up, and I had created like probably 2 dozen wonderful long nails that had slightly little bananas on them. You just straighten those out, and she just tossed them away. We were so tight for time. It's like, ugh. But that way would destroy the nail, right? You're talking about the
nail.
Speaking of reuse and the jewelry, do you see this? Pass it around to everybody. Do you know what that bracelet is made out of? It's a reuse. It's a bicycle spoke.
Neat.
Yep. And so I got that from a gift for someone for being a bike to work person.
So yeah, so I'll show the tool now since we're talking about reuse.
Yep.
Well, this is a gardening tool.
Start with leaves.
Small weeds up the surface. Okay, so it's all repurposed.
Wow.
This is still strapping that they used to put around pallets.
Right.
Oh, wow. That's in abundance.
Yeah.
In abundance.
And it can be sharpened with a file.
Yeah.
This is an old piece of wood.
That's awesome.
And this is a bicycle tube.
A bicycle tube?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Straight through.
It's not even tape.
Well, I cheated. I taped underneath it, but the this was all the way down outside. So.
How did you?
A found handle.
A found handle, yeah. No, that's that should go in the Portland Latin Museum right there. That's awesome. That's a good one. Yeah, I do.
And what about the shape of the
handle? Yeah, I was kind of rounded. I don't have a lot of hands.
It looks like a football, a sideways football.
Yeah. I just put the tight in the sides down,
yeah.
And then took my hand and started pushing it down.
Right. Because usually I've seen horseshoe, I've seen what are those called? Saddle? A horse saddle? Stirrup hose. Yeah, the stirrup hose. Are similar.
It's similar, but just doesn't have the movement.
That's what I'm talking about. Those are really, oh God, those are really helpful when you have that swivel. That one doesn't, but it's cheap.
Yeah.
Plus, it's probably a
sharp one. And a lot of the whole thing about weeding, too, is if you do it early, it's an easy job. Do you feel like doing it is difficult?
Well, I always wait until I feel like doing it. But the issue is, if it's if you do the weeding right after it rains, it's a whole lot easier. Because then they
that
pull it.
That would be nice for some of them. They would just pull the weeds.
Yeah.
Did you get all the roots that way, too?
Roots.
Yeah. But in the very first meeting that you had, you said, he asked him what the bicycle was called, and he asked him what the bicycle was called, and he asked him what the bicycle
was called. Yeah, I did,
yeah. In the tube.
Yeah.
Not the tire, in the tube.
In the tube, yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm not quite sure how you sealed the ends, though, because then I don't see any stray. Made a little knot. It's like so sketchy that it comes by. And then you like razor blade it so that the it's still on it. Okay. Wow. So did you see that on like the internet? Okay. That's pretty sweet. Any other physicality things you want to talk about? Because I'm going to go right into some conceptual things. Okay, good garbage. Good garbage.
Which is at the end of the year, but as far as the score is concerned, it's just they couldn't make it.
Right, yep. I mean, it's been around for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gone. Yep.
I had saved all my caps and things like that.
Right. The challenge that the garbage had is that they wanted to make things into art. know, and it's, I don't have an artistic brain, so it's like, what do you do with, you know, a thousand this or that? It's like, damn, that was a challenge. And, oh well. Well, what happens is, though, you know, U of L graduates people all the time, and somebody else is going to have the chutzpah to do something, this and that and the other, because, you know, it's, things are not ever really going to change. It's just going to be more of this, and we're just going to see what kind of more creativity we have. Cans. Well, okay, I want to just switch gears, and that is to let you know what happened when I went to Google and I typed in like DIY or do it yourself or just kind of reskilling and images. You know, I love images because you can figure out what's going on. And then I came to this site, which is how to DIY reskill libraries. And then just, I want to get your reaction, just briefly kind of summarize what it was going on. This PhD person or something had these ideas, which was the question to ask is so what if money was not a concern, and so what are the attractions to draw more people to the library? E-book readers or Starbucks or 3D printers, things like that. Do we want to start drawing more people to the library? Do we want to improve the library's physical space? Do we want to create more librarian contact opportunities online? Because now is what is precious and scarce is not information, but people's time and attention. And I think that education is not about centralized instruction anymore. Rather, it's a process establishing oneself as a node in a broad network of distributed creativity. So, you know, we're not teachers, we're not we're just nodes anymore in a huge network. So if you've ever taken any computer science, I guess, you know, we limit ourselves down to that now. One thing we did talk about was to just add lots of white space in the whiteboards in the library. So every place you go, you can just kind of like start drawing, and you can have meetings with people, and I guess, you know, just have create places where people can meet and talk about ideas. And then they get into some serious stuff, which is actions to cultivate a successful community of practice. And a community of practice is jargon for people who come together for a theme. They like this one topic. So they're a community of practice. They like doing that. And there's tons of them. And then the nature of a community of practice is dynamic in that the interests, goals, and members are subject to change. And then you want to create opportunities for open dialogue within and with outside perspectives. We want to welcome and allow different levels of participation, develop both public and private community spaces, combine familiarity and excitement, focus on the values of the community, find and nurture a regular rhythm for the community. This is all thought of to be like in a library, all these kind of synergistic kind of things. So I think it's kind of cool that we're in this reskilling, reusing class, and these people are talking about libraries, you know, being kind of a conduit for that kind of stuff. So maybe it's appropriate. I think last month we talked about, you know, where can you meet? Oh, you know, bars and stuff like that. But here's a statement of saying, well, libraries have chutzpah too, I guess. You know, these PhD candidate people, they're like this all the time. They got the ideas. I'm Oh, I'm
and she's been getting young people in the life.
Well, even if the city of Louisville has no money to really do much programming with the library, they have the space, and we can create ourselves as a community. Well, they had solar power here, solar workshop here. How did that go, by the way?
It wasn't very well attended, and I was a little disappointed. They're saying right now it would take at least 10 years.
That's what I was going to ask, yeah, how long it takes.
I'm trying to put it in West Virginia and Pittsburgh.
So there's good stories and
there's a little more space.
But it's nuanced, and you have to pay attention, and you have to just jump right into this stuff and see if it's going to work or not work, or need to be retrofitted or all that.
But
kind of stuff.
I thought it was a start, and I thought it was all the way up to make sure I got anything and refrigerator and all that
It'd be nice to find some huge donor and just put a couple panels right here on the library, you know. And
well, the other thing is the technology is changing, and there is some
Well, you're starting to raise my dander, so there you go. Now you did it.
Just presidency, those coal mines are not coming back.
That's cool. That's a whole other universe in itself. So thanks for bringing that up. Getting back to the libraries, did you know that the libraries now have a license that they can show pretty much any movie that they want now? Like usually, if you show us a group of people, you have to pay $5,000 to the whatever it's called royalties. But they did this thing, and it's like 95% of all movies can be shown. So the library can create lots of up. There's a lot of movies, there are a lot of topics of movies that we can, kind of gather together. It's kind of cool.
It's amazing to me what they have in their.
Well, I'm just talking more as a group, as a gathering thing, because the lawyers get involved when you have a few people together, and that shut down big systems. Interesting, eh? Another place that people can gather together is like the land bank has like a coffee time. I don't know if it's Thursday mornings or something like that, but yeah, the land bank? Time bank. Time bank has a coffee gathering time, once a week or week or something like that. So they have a nice facility, not for profit, so they don't pay taxes. That's good. Another place to meet again would be at the table. There's a cafe over
Where's
here.
Where's that located?
It's about 3 blocks that way.
The table? No, the table's a little further to the
I was going to say, that doesn't really work on a bar table.
What you can, restaurant.
It's at,
for
2 hours. Yeah, I love the table.
And they have
I'm glad you brought that up, because in the area of community spaces, and you guys probably are all over this, but in the Broken Sidewalk Bar, this morning there was a post about a new parklet that's going to be in front of the table. Do you guys know what a parklet is? It's kind of like usually a temporary space, like a micro park that typically reclaims part of, can be parking lots, but usually it's part of a public thoroughfare, which may be, its actual traffic may not, come up to the actual capacity, so the cities and towns are willing to allow those spaces. So the city already has a parklet structure. So typically it would protect, the users from the traffic. In this case, I think if you look at the picture, it's a wooden bench.
A pavilion?
Right. And they've actually used it before in one of the, what are those events called? Resurface.
Yeah. I think I saw your post.
Yeah. And it's temporary, but that's actually a really cool idea. It's something I'm really excited about.
Oh, so it's a building that has a roof?
It's an outdoor space that has seating, and it serves the function of a park.
One side is going to be bicycle aisle, and they're going to put a level sidewalk in front of the table. It's an 18 by 18.
So it's open. There's no roof.
So the table will have outdoor seating.
So they can have outdoor
seating. What happens when it's 100 degrees in the sun?
Nobody wants to be outside when it's 100.
Okay, but they don't have umbrellas or anything like that.
They could.
Okay, yeah, I'd like some pergolas to make a pergola.
But the point is, they're not going to throw it away when the mayor gets done playing in it. They're going to.
Sure. I mean, if we were living in Seattle, it probably would have umbrellas.
Yeah, now does it have upright? Yeah, does it have Wi-Fi?
Good question, good idea. The table might already have them.
Oh, okay. Table does, and then you can probably just get a recharger. What are those things called? Where you can jump, you can strengthen the Wi-Fi signal.
An extender.
Yeah, so it can go across the street even then. This gets from, they cost $50 and it's good forever, right? Yeah, of course.
Back of the house, and we needed to get them for the front.
Yeah,
that was cool. That is, it looks like it's going to be cool and something. That they took to resurface for a while. Talking about trying to get resurfaced. Yeah, the closest they got was the very.
It can be done as long as it's close enough to the freeway where they don't have to spend too much time navigating crazy streets. There's so many.
Going into the gathering.
Well, I mean, the intersections don't even intersect.
Getting
them
to come west of 9th Street and whatever.
We're raising the bar, dude. We're raising the bar. Yeah, we're taking it to the next level.
And that.
When you say we, which group are you referring to? That you're involved in? Which I've been to, and Ray's been to as well.
Love City on 26th Street, and what used to be Portland Recycling is called
Core Design. And they're going to be doing what?
We have music and
So not in the Tim Falcon parking lot.
No, Tim Falcon
has another. It's right next
door. Right now, I know.
Now,
what's happening in that space long term before the recycling site?
Gil Holland.
What are they doing there? They are excited. Those are cool. But he's all happy.
There's going to be a purchase display at Down Hall, which is
actually the
things at the art
and if you want to volunteer, we can use you.
We have the craft fair.
Yep.
And we're going to have a shuttle, but it's going to go.
What's it called? Love City?
26th and 11th.
11th.
So one thing I have.
So you bring your bike to a simple location?
You bike around as a group.
Or are you renting bikes?
Bicycle companies coming and they're going to have free bikes, which you have to reserve.
Oh, okay.
And they're going to have, but it's going to, they're going to have tours.
Now, one thing that I wanted to do was to have a table for reskilling and reusing at the art fair.
You need to talk to Maria.
And I already talked with her, set it all up, and realized that my schedule is completely booked for that day. So here's what it is. If anybody wants to volunteer, here's what it is. Which is, we're going to find random pieces of wood, and then we're going to find screws, and then we will have the kids come up to the table and just say, put one screw into the previously existing structure. So it'll be just like this conglomerate, globule of just pieces of wood coming out of the table. And then we'll see what happens. And I call that art. And then if they're getting way too organized and cool, then we'll blindfold them. But that's the plan anyway. So I can't do it if anybody else wants to.
I'm tied up all day.
I've got a drill gun.
I'm on that committee.
Because I don't know how many kids are going to be able to know how to use a drill gun. Like, this is a screw. Put the screw in the screw gun. Well, they should do it in every kid's class, right? Well, they do talk about this in this little library, do-it-yourself, is having maker repairs and all that kind of stuff. So it's coming up. And a lot of it has to do with the word capacity building, which is to basically empower people to do more and as a community and as individuals. So, for instance, one thing that we could do at Portland Now meeting, we could have like posters on the wall that just create a sense of identity of who we are, rather than just being. Oh, it's already on my list of things to do. Or to, for instance, have a Gantt chart or a racetrack chart of all the people who want to build and maintain rain gardens in their homes, and just kind of celebrate by means of long-term things, just making, showing progress even if it's slow. How about National Raking Shut-Ins Home Work Day? Can we find out of who are shut in, and we can do that kind of stuff? Or what to do with the dog poo in the tennis courts? There's things that we can always do as a community. There's local little stuff that can happen. And then what happened is that I found out recently what's happening with energy is that we're drilling energy and we're piping it in pipelines and sending it all over here and there. And we're bringing it across a national treasure. I guess it's the Native American lands, and they don't like that. And so they're trying to protest, and the company that's drilling and doing the pipelines doesn't like that, so they went to the just newly released area where they are like buried, sacred burial grounds, and they just musked the whole place up with caterpillars and diggers and stuff, just desecrated it. But that happened in Kentucky with in Uniontown. We did that. That's the largest native grave desecration ever. And so I think Reggie Meeks, who's with Kentucky, he's a legislator, knows about this. But I think everybody ought to know that, you know, we're doing cute capacity buildings. We're doing cute DIY. But there's bigger things that are happening in the past, as well as just right now. Like, why did a company desecrate a site that wasn't really on the pipeline area just to be mean? You know, that's not acceptable. We should get mad. So there is, like for instance, and then if you're pissed off, what do we do? What can we piggyback on with the energy of something like the BDS? I don't know if you know what the BDS is. It's called boycott, divest, and sanctions. Like, I think, like, maybe Israel's a bad actor, and people with money are saying, I'm moving away my money from anything to do with these bad actors, and it's making a big impact. So the question is, what can there be as far as BDS, boycott, divest, and sanction? But it has to do with our own local, our own empowerment, our own what we do, because it's a technique that's really freaking out the people that are, you know, initially globally, but yet it seems to strike a chord. So, you know, when we talk about it at the beginning, policy changes, and we need some serious things to change. What does that look like? That's just a stimulator for the brain, and I would love to hear your thoughts about that and follow up on that, because that's not going anywhere. We're going to continue to strive for such as that. Part of the agenda is to close the meeting at 7:30, which kind of maybe might happen. I have a random practicum, which is like, hey, I just got a heart rate monitor this month and I'm celebrating. That was pretty cool. It really helps you get excited about your health. And I think health is really important. And how much you exercise is obviously important. And so, you know, if you don't have money for a heart rate monitor, you can just kind of run in place and every 10 seconds just hit the floor or go find a soft grassy area and just put your torso on the ground and then come back up. It's enormous for getting your heart rate up. Just keeping yourself healthy. I don't see that happening really. The only thing I see at Lantern Park is basketball, and I play tennis, but trying to avoid the poops when I can. But the other thing is that I'm getting excited about is log splitting. So, you know, I think last month we talked about got some really big logs and they're ready to crack. But putting a log right in the middle of a inner tube, a tire. To put the tire down, put the stump inside the tire, and then just start hacking at the ends of it. Chip off the tips, the ends, like you typically would if something's really hard. You can't crack right down the middle, it's too big. And then it all stays. All the pieces stay right within the tire. It looks like a little flower that unfolds as you chop, 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 chop. It's gonna, and then there it is right there. You just grab all those suckers and then you put them in your place for storage.
I thought
for the
similar
winter.
Thing where they had taken and put with a big tree.
A metal strap, okay.
Yeah.
So, similar kind of thing, yeah. Well, and I have a chicken that's so dangerously close. It goes down, and those wood chips, those wood pieces fly fast. And if that hits that chicken, man, it's going to be hurting.
I've got some seed beans in here.
Seed beans?
Yeah, if anybody wants a garden, these are the garden asparagus thing.
Wow, those are really long. Those are really long. Are they? Okay. How tall do they grow?
Well, you put them on poles, so 6 feet or more. So,
yeah.
Anybody that wants any, well.
Okay, well. Okay, some are dried out.
Have these like in an Asian restaurant.
So,
when you eat them.
So you would pour this in some smaller bowl. Yes.
Okay.
The bean itself, the bear would be more. But this was to let it go to seed. You got to go to seed. So this is not going to
dry out. We're going to try this out.
So you eat it just like a green bean.
Oh, okay, initially, when it's younger,
right.
You eat it like a green bean, and then you always want to save some more for seeds.
You can also make an apples.
Those are impressive.
This is the most prolific.
I love beans. You know what? My beans are cracking my steaks. They're so heavy, my steaks are cracking and falling over. That's neat. All right. Well, thank you for. Let's see. Well, what I wanted to do was to read to you, and I won't, the anchor story. So when you come around in Portland and pick up the next anchor, this is the story right here. Yeah. Well, not this week. I hope they publish it because it's
the anchor is tough.
Yeah, it's the only neighborhood Portland is that has a neighborhood
that old.
Yeah, I think so. Plus, I was going to be also inspiring everybody by reciting the Henry V, Scene 1, Once More into the Breach, which is all encouraging to us who are venturing forth in resiliency, reusing and reskilling. But in the interest of time, I mean, this is awesome. This is just awesome. But you know, look it up. King Henry, Henry V. You know, it's all over the internet if you want to. And you'll have to be inspired by someone else, not me. Because once again, way too much content for, just because we just enjoy each other's company so much that we just don't get through the agenda. And I didn't even go into my books, right? What are my books that I have there? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's there's a, yeah. When you YouTube it, you'll like it. Henry V, Once More into the Breach. But anyway, yeah.
You have the Bio-Integrated Farm by, I'm not going to say the guy first.
Sean.
Dirt, The Ecstatic Skin of the Earth by William Brand Logan. And Self-Sufficiency on a Shoestring by Alan Gill Bridgewater. And these are all public library books. So you can line up the list.
Yeah, so there's excitement in the air, and I just wanted to share. Thank you for all attending, and listen to this over and over again, and share the link when you get it up. It'll be up in a little while. Like I said, metajenny.com/reskill. And last month was catastrophic for the MP3 audio file, but this month it's going to be just pristine. I can tell. I got a good vibe about it. So with that being said, I think I'm going to leave it there.